Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast, because when you're making money, sometimes life can just be crude. Hey folks, how you doing? Hello again, my name is Jason Spies. I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and talk show host. And on today's episode, I interview Kevin Lear. He's the president for the North Dakota Buffalo Association and also co-owner of Heartland Bison Ranch out of Rugby, North Dakota. In this exclusive interview with Kevin Lear, we get an update on the bison industry, some of the historical ups and downs of the roller coaster bison meat market, as well as what they're doing these days with drones on the ranch. Fantastic exclusive interview with Kevin Lear, North Dakota Buffalo Association, and Heartland Bison Ranch in just a moment. But first, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors for literally keeping our lights on. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Well, don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Greg Tavine of Emerging Prairies has to say about Hatch coaching.
When I think of the world that I want to live in, it's with people that care, that take risks, that reinvent themselves, reinvent their organizations, reinvent their industries. And Eric's a model citizen for that. He's trying to solve problems. He's trying to bring people into those solutions. He does incredibly well, but he lives generously. I think a community filled with people like Eric that are solving problems, giving it their best, and creating an environment for others to lead and soar and succeed, that's the place I want to live. And so Eric's the type of person that's in my community, and I'm really grateful for that.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.
Yeah, my name is Kevin Lear. I'm the executive director of the North Dakota Buffalo Association and then co-operator at Heartland Bison Ranch in Rugby, North Dakota.
Bison and buffalo, let's talk about that a little bit. Now, first of all, there is a difference between the two, isn't there?
Well, there is. I mean, in technical terms, there is a difference between bison and buffalo. You know, typically, a buffalo would be like a water buffalo you're going to find in Africa. And then bison is what the actual name is for the North American bison that you find on the Great Plains and up into Canada in North America. So right now in the industry, it's gone on so long where it's basically an interchangeable word where you'll see bison and buffalo, and basically people think it's the same thing. So the technical term is bison. But most people know what you're talking about when you say buffalo, too.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that. Now, you mentioned you're a co-operator or a owner at the Heartland Bison Ranch, is that right?
Yep, Heartland Bison Ranch, yep, right in kind of like north central North Dakota, right over by Rugby. So, yeah, we've been, for our ranch, we've been raising bison since 1996. So we got into it when things, in terms of agriculture, in 96, 97, 98, bison market was looking really good. And I think it was just a little bit before its time, because by the late 1990s and specifically into the early 2000s, the market took a pretty big hit and came down drastically. And when that happened, there was a number of ranchers in North Dakota who, you know, the economics of the ranching bison just wasn't working for them anymore, so they had to shift gears. And at that same time, cattle prices were coming back up, commodity prices were coming back up, and so we saw a lot of guys shift away from raising bison to going back to more traditional agricultural outputs that were a little more economical for them. But now, you know, fast forward to today, the market's basically, right now, we can say that the market is in the strongest position it's ever been in, you know, in modern history for the bison industry.
I guess I'm curious about the market because, you know, there's bison is not anywhere near ground beef, of course. And when you think of bison, you know, you go to the grocery store, there's maybe one or two tubes of it, if you can find it, and it's generally in a freezer aisle, you know. And so when I think of bison, I think of, obviously the health food stores and some of the higher-end restaurants. Is there a kind of a national type of a bison place where it all goes to, or do you got to send it all over the different places, the different restaurants and different, after it goes to the slaughterhouse?
Yeah, so there's kind of like there's a number of slaughterhouses that specifically are geared towards bison. There's one right here in North Dakota, actually. It's the North American Bison Cooperative, which is in New Rockford, North Dakota, and they're 100% bison processing facility. And so, you know, they hit national supply chains with their product after it's been, you know, fabricated to an actual end product for consumption. But yeah, you're right. It's hard to find it in retail grocery stores, depending on where you go. I mean, there are bison products in Kroger's. Walmart used to carry it, but I actually think Walmart might not be carrying it anymore because of they just couldn't get enough of the supply. And that's the number one thing that as an industry we're looking at right now is how do we grow the herd to be able to fill up the supply, because our demand for the product is just through the roof, and that's what's keeping the price relatively pretty high when you go to a grocery store. I think sometimes people get sticker shock when they look at that, but then, you know, you think, well, why haven't we really hit that ceiling yet in terms of our price point? Why haven't things started to level off? And what we're seeing on our side of the industry is it's basically the healthiest red meat you can eat on the planet. When you look at what it has for, you know, good fats versus bad fats, you're talking iron content, omega-3s, just the protein source in general, it's super good for you. And so when you look at people and dietary consumption of red meat and how they're switching up diet for this new kind of health conscious generation of Americans, what we're seeing for a consumer trend is people maybe are eating a little bit less red protein, but in terms of eating a little bit less, they're willing to pay a little bit more for a higher quality of a product. But just to give you an idea, you know, kind of, I've had this conversation with people before, and they say, well, you guys are going to be in competition with the beef market. And what I say to that is, nope, I don't think we'll ever be in competition with the beef market, because when you look at what the beef market does in the United States, in one day, the beef market in the United States will process twice as many cattle as the bison industry will do under USDA federal inspection in a year. Right now, we're processing about 60 to 61,000 head of bison under USDA inspection in a year versus, you know, 105, 110, depending on the day, for beef cattle in the United States. So the difference in scale for both industries is completely different. So we're a niche market for sure in the protein sector. And what we found is there's a lot of people who really like the product that's coming out from the bison industry, and that's keeping our demand incredibly high. So one of the things that we do, like on the national level, because our industry is relatively small, you can kind of get a pretty good pulse on what's going on. And when they survey, like, our commercial meat marketers, like our big meat processors for our industry, which would be North Dakota's processing facility. There's a big processor down in Brush, Colorado, Rocky Mountain Natural Meats. There's another one, Rapid City, Western Buffalo Company. When they start surveying those guys, they do it twice a year from the National Association, and they survey them and ask them, you know, based on what you're getting for supply, based on what you're getting for inquiry for your product, where are you at in terms of meeting your supply? And overall, the trend is they think that they could supply today, at today's prices right now, if they had 20% more product on the rail ready to be fabricated, they would have no problem moving that. And so that's a substantial shift, you know, if you think about 20% more for our industry. But, you know, that takes a lot to get that many more animals online just because of the biology of the animal itself. You know, we have an extra year that it takes our females to get to production age. They don't finish as fast as beef cattle, so we have a little bit more inputs into them to get them to a finished weight where they can be processed, you know, economically speaking, you know, making as much money off that animal as you can as a rancher. So there's a lot of really bright spots right now in our industry, and for the first time, you know, the last, you know, 7-8 years, our growth trend is being driven by the demand for the finished product, which is bison meat. I think, you know, back in the late 90s, it was a little more inflated in terms of they thought that there was going to be this big push for the product, but the demand wasn't there yet. And so it almost had to go through a natural cycle of just, you know, pure economics that it was overpriced. And so everything kind of hit the basement floor. And when that happened, the price of specifically ground bison came down so low that people were like, yeah, why not? I'll try it, you know, and see what it's like, because it was, you know, at one time it was like half of what it was for a pound of beef. So, and then once people started eating it and liking it, and they liked the taste, and it wasn't like this wild game animal thing that they were kind of had a vision of, and then all of a sudden it came roaring back. So we're riding that wave of opportunity now.
So how many cows are there in a bison?
Like, well, I don't know. I can tell you the exact number of production females right now. But, like, if you look, like, Canada and the United States together, if you look at the collective herd size, that would be between private ranchers, state parks, and your tribal herds, because I'd have to look at the statistic again, but I believe there's, like, 19 different states that have specific tribal herds that are within those states. So there's quite a few tribal herds actually too, but about 400, depending on what sports you look at, about 475 to 490,000 bison total. That's total herd size for all of North America, basically. And so it's pretty small, I mean, in all reality, but it's coming back, for more and more people are looking at getting into it.
So you mentioned the amount of bison that are, I guess, are slaughtered every year, according to the USDA, that sort of thing. From when it's born, what's the timeline on something like that to when it actually ends up in the supermarket?
Yeah, so from when a calf's born, typically guys can get probably between, on the faster side, 18 to 20 months, probably to that 26 to 28 month range, that animal. So typically, like, your prime animals, anything over 30 months won't be classified as a prime animal. And then it kind of depends a little bit on how you're doing the finishing side of it. You know, a lot of guys like to try to run them on grass for as long as they can and then finish them off with a growing ration or a finish ration in a dry lot scenario, you know, maybe 120, 140 days. That slows it down a little bit, whereas guys who can get a little more gain on them if they keep them dry lotted. And then you have, that, you know, that's one side. And then you have another side where there's a niche within the niche where there's this grass-fed model where people are choosing just to grass, you know, grass background those animals all the way up to where they think it's a doable kill weight on them. And so those animals take a little bit longer, but typically right around 20 to 22 months, I would say, a lot of animals get killed at that age.
And how does that compare with, say, the cattle industry? So the 20 months for the bison, how much for the cattle in comparison to the kill?
Well, honestly, I'd have to look, but I think it's relatively maybe 14 months, 15 months, somewhere in there. Don't quote me on that, but it is a little bit sooner, just because the genetics for gaming here are a lot different than bison. And cattle are a little bit different, too, in the sense, like, bison are seasonal gainers, whereas, you know, when they actually get to the point where you're especially during the late fall into winter, the days start getting shorter, there's less sunlight, bison actually naturally start to reduce their metabolism rate, where they actually consume less feed, because it's almost like a semi-hibernation, and that's a natural evolution of the animal. So, when we factor, like, our cow herd size, for the size of our herd, we probably consume about a third of the amount of feed over the course of a year, in terms of if we had a cattle herd the same size. So that's a benefit of raising the animals, that we actually have less in terms of supplemental feeding to take place on our cow herd with the equivalent size of a beef herd, if you know what I mean.
Sure, yeah, and last comparison question. So, like, is there, like, an average cattle weight when it's through the slaughter versus an average, say, bison weight?
I'm not sure, because I don't really know a lot of guys who are cattle finishers. I'm assuming that they probably have, like, a target weight. For bison, like, if you have a prime bison bull going into slaughter, you would be looking somewhere around 1,150 to 1,200 pounds. With cattle, it'd probably be about the same, about 1,300, 1,100, Yeah, I would think it'd be about the same.
Okay, so actually, a bison and a cow or a cattle are pretty much very similar, huh?
Well, in terms of the weight to process, yeah, but in terms of raising them, not so much. I would say there's some definite advantages, and probably you could classify it as a disadvantage. I guess I would call it more of a challenge when you're raising bison, because they are, in terms of domestication, like bison are not domesticated like cattle are. I mean, bison still have a very natural wild, I wouldn't necessarily say really wild side, but they have a very natural attitude towards how they live, and they thrive in northern climates for sure. I mean, we don't have windbreaks, we don't have anything for our bison. I mean, they literally live out on the range all winter long. We'll go out and supplement them with hay, kick it out there for them like once a week, but we, where there's no artificial shelter for them. And when we calve them, like, our bison go into, like, depending on which herd we're looking at, but, like, just for an example, like, one of our herds, we put them into a 150-acre pasture, and that's it. Like, we go out maybe every 3 days, actually physically out to the pasture and check them when they calve, or we'll just fly our drone up over the herd and we'll start counting little red dots because little large calves are popping out. Like, we don't pull calves, we don't do cesareans, we don't do any, like, tagging when they're calves or vaccinations when they're calves, nothing. Like, it is as natural as we can get it. That's the way that we want to continue raising them. So that's different than, you know, than the working with the cattle. And then your infrastructure costs are going to be a little bit higher just because you're going to need a little bit better fence and a little bit better corral. But, and that's kind of something that's changed a little bit, too. Like, for the most part, when you go and see, like, a guy who's putting up a new fence for cattle, if it's four barbed wire, you could modify that fence very quick in order to run bison onto it. And it wouldn't cost you a whole heck of a lot more to do that. But the corral system is where you're going to probably see the biggest difference, where guys who run bison through a corral system, a high-pressure area, those are typically going to be pretty beefed up and pretty heavy. And then it's a lot of low-stress handling technique with bison, because you'd rather lead them than chase them. So, you know, cattle, you might push them wherever you want to go, just make them go. But with bison, it's more of getting them trained into a specific pattern on how you want to work them through your ranch, whether it's your grazing or your alleyways or whatever, letting them work their way through and figuring it out. And then once they know how you want them to work, then they know kind of what they do. I mean, their intelligence is incredibly high. I mean, I think I put them kind of right there with horses in terms of being able to read people and being able to understand the weak spots in what your operation has for fencing or corrals or anything like that. So, yeah, they're incredibly intelligent, that's for sure.
Talking with Kevin Lear with the is it the North Dakota Bison Association? I'm sorry, the North Dakota Buffalo Association?
Yeah, it's actually the North Dakota Buffalo Association.
Okay, North Dakota Buffalo Association, and then Heartland Bison as well. And just talking about the bison industry in general here, and I'm glad you brought up the word drone, because I wanted to ask you about if you guys are integrating any of the drone technology into your day-to-day operations, and it sounds like you guys are. Describe that a little bit.
Yeah, it's something like I have a brother who actually is a drone pilot for a company over in outside of Minneapolis, and they started integrating drone technology into some of the things that they're doing with their power plants and transmission lines and stuff. And so over the course of about 3-4 years, we've started to slowly get into it. And now we fly one of our newest drones. What we've started doing is using that specifically for checking herds, which is kind of fun because we can spin that thing up, and from, you know, the deck of the house on the ranch, we can actually fly to any part of our ranch that we have under our operation at the home ranch there and check it. So with some of the stuff that we can do with our drone, which is really neat, is we can actually program our flight patterns. And so when we fly like a fence line, I can actually program that route and then put it up, upload it into the computer. And then when I send the drone up, I can just click, hit this route, and the drone itself will actually fly down and do basically a check on the fence lines. If there's any trees laying over after a storm, or if it's a winter storm, like last year over Christmas, I kid you not, like we got 17.5 inches of snow at our ranch over Christmas. And we could not actually get out to the herd for a couple days until we dug out with snowblower and tractor loaders and stuff to get out there. So what we did, just to make sure everything was still where we needed it and no fences were drifted over, we set the drone up. We checked the entire fence line of that pasture that we had the bison holding in for the winter. We checked to make sure that they still had ample hay out there because we had loaded them up before the storm had hit. And we just let them sit, and they did their thing. They rode that entire blizzard out just fine. We actually go up, we'll take an elevated picture of the entire herd, and then you can just freeze that right on your computer screen, and then it's just a matter of counting the dots, and then you can do your entire animal number check. So that's one of the ways that we've been utilizing our drone a little bit more. And then the other thing that's pretty cool is when we move animals from pasture to pasture, we actually lead them with what we call a cake truck. So it's just a pasture feeder, like a Mighty Handy feeder, that has a range mineral cube in it, and they get used to that truck. So as soon as they hear that, they'll actually come in, start coming from a corner of the pasture up to the truck, and then we'll open up gates, take the truck through, and the whole herd will follow you right into the next pasture that we want them to be grazing for, you know, however much time. But we can, at the same time, like, we can send the drone up and send it to the back corner of one of those cells and start actually looking to make sure we can sweep that cell without ever having to send a four-wheeler in or anything like that. Like, we'll know if all the animals have made it through the gate right there from the truck, and then close it up, and away they go into the next pasture grazing. So those are some of the ways that we're using drones that I think is pretty neat kind of management tools.
What's your biggest barriers right now in the industry? What's the biggest issues that you guys are facing?
Well, the biggest issue right now is supply. I would say, we're in a full-blown drive to recruit new ranchers. From the national level all the way down to your state and local level, these associations, the bison industry is kind of unique in the way that there's a very strong network of associations from the national association down to your state and regionals, we call them. So, like, North Dakota has an association, South Dakota, Montana, Wisconsin, Minnesota, all these places that have bison ranchers that have been doing it for a while. There's this neat network. So there's, from a network standpoint, everybody's trying to drive to get new ranchers to come in to the industry. So that would be one of the challenges. I would say the other challenge is that we do have two specific diseases that are we're trying to tackle in the industry to make sure that we have adequate vaccination protocol to handle that. One is mycoplasma, and the other one is malignant catarrhal fever, or MCF, which the beef industry has those diseases to deal with as well. But for bison specifically, the way that those diseases kind of mutate are a little bit differently. So those are some things that we are, from the national level on down, we're very keen on making sure that we have research going in and dollars funding research to make sure that we're on top of those diseases as well. So I would say those are kind of the two big ones, but really it's the drive for four more ranchers to get into it and to see it as a viable option. Might not be, you shift your entire operation over to bison, but the way to potentially diversify your operation, we see that as a definite opportunity for guys in the agricultural sector, because it is definitely a bright spot right now in agriculture, that's for sure.
Any final thoughts? Kevin Lear with the North Dakota Buffalo Association and Heartland Bison. Any final thoughts?
Well, I tell everybody this. We call it the bison advantage, and there's some definite good things about being in the bison industry. And I think right now, we're seeing the most stable prices and stable industry kind of across the board, from the cow-calf guy to the feeder guy to the processor. Every step of the way with where our price points are, guys are making a good living raising bison, and I think that's something that we definitely want to tout. We're going into our sale season now. It's our sale season for live animals is pretty seasonal, just because there's not that many animals being sold every year via auction barn or anything like that. And, we're going in with, you're talking, 2-year-old bred heifers are going to be somewhere between, probably $3,900 to $4,200 a piece. You got heifer calves that are going to be marketed right off the ranches or through sale barns that are going to be somewhere around that, $1,900 to $2,000 mark. And same thing with bull calves. Bull calves will be, they're kind of, they have a prime price on them right now because they're tagged as a slaughter animal. They'll probably be somewhere in that $1,800 to $2,000 mark as well. So our live animal prices are strong. Our market prices for animals on the rail are strong, and we're seeing a consumer from a national level that is wanting more and more of the product that we're producing. So it's like I said, it's a definite bright spot in agriculture today.
And that was Kevin Lear with the North Dakota Buffalo Association and the Heartland Bison Ranch out of Rugby, North Dakota. To listen to this podcast and other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly newsletter. Also, check out our social media pages like Twitter and Facebook. Those links are also available at thecrudelife.com. And once again, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank our sponsors. And if I could ask you folks to click on our sponsors page, take a look at those sponsors and see if there's anybody you know, anybody you can reach out to, or anybody you might want to do some business with. We'd appreciate that very much because they literally keep our lights on and interviews like this free. It seems everywhere I go these days, someone is telling me about the success of Hatch Coaching. Listen to what professional speaker Mark J. Lindquist has to say.
He is a person in this market and now in markets across the country with Hatch Coaching that is revolutionizing the way people approach the business. He's reinventing the way people look at the people model. That's why he brings in hundreds of people from all over the country who are trying to figure out how to do what he's doing in their market.
For more information, call 701-212-1572. Or visit CoachingWithHatch.com. That's CoachingWithHatch.com.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
And that's it for this episode. My name is Jason Spies. Till next time, be happy and remember, sometimes life can just be crude. We'll see you next time, folks. The music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. To find out more about the Moody River Band or their music, visit our website, thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musician tab. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab.